ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् सह नौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः सो फॉर एनहांसिंग अवर क्लैरिटी we are now taking a different portions of the bhashyam shankara bhagavata's bhashyam and different sections of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad so now we are focusing only and more for these sessions are mainly for preparing us gradually for contemplation so how to understand the Upanishadic teaching not mechanically reading the mantras not mechanically reading the even bhashyam also how the arguments are presented so in the previous class few classes we took up the contents of the ghata bhashyam and we saw how shankara bhagavatpada just using the part as example he refutes actually this shunyavadi and Bauddha, Yogacara Bauddha, are called Khanika Vijnanavadi, and also Nayayika. And today's topic will be different. See, we have seen the two sections early in the first chapter, where the two upasanas, two meditations were prescribed. Both were Virat upasanas, meditation upon Bhagavan as the Virat. The Lord as the Virat means the one who is one of the gross universe. Even meditation upon the Lord in the of the gross universe is not an easy joke. Meditation upon the Lord's form means what? Meditation upon Lord's Swarupam means meditation upon one's own real nature. For which you should have understood the real nature and dwell upon your real nature. Which is meditation upon, dwelling upon one's own real nature is what? Dwelling upon the real nature of the Lord, the truth, which is contemplation. For which you must understand very clearly the nature, which is nididhyasana. But meditation upon the Lord's rupam, the form, not the real nature, but the form. What is that? Whole universe is Bhagavan's form. Means, Bhagavan is Vishwarupaha, the one whose form is the whole universe. So he is called Vishwarupaha, so Virat. And even meditating upon the Virat Rupam, Vishwarupam also is not easy. That is why we need an Alambanam. You know why? The meditator I, or you the meditator, are part of this whole. The tiniest of the tiniest fraction of the inexplicably vast universe. How can you, your tiny little mind, comprehend the total? The fraction can never comprehend the total, isn't it? There is a meditation upon, see, Swarupam is easy. Meditation upon Rupam is very difficult. That is why we need an Alambanam. A symbol which stands for the whole. So that's why here in the Virat Upanishad in Vedic periods we never had the murtis like what we have now. Therefore that time first the Ashva, Medha Ashva, the horse which is worshipped and used in performing the Ashwamedha Yaga was taken as Alambanam, a symbol for Virat, the first Upasanam. The second Upasana we saw Agni, the fire which is kindled to perform the Ashwamedha Yaga. Ashwamedha Agni was taken as a symbol for this Upasanam, Virad Upasanam. And now, in the next Upasanam, it is called Udgita Upasanam. Udgita Upasanam means what? Udgita is a name of the Omkaraha. The Pranavaha Omkaraha, otherwise is called Udgita. Why Pranavaha Omkaraha is called Udgita? Because that which is recited, sung in a very high pitch is called Udgita. So in Samaveda, the Omkaraha is called Udgita because it is recited in a very high pitch. Udgita. So Udgita Upasanam is the third Upasanam. And here, Udgita Omkaraha, here, who is the Devat? Udgita is only an Alambanam. Om is only an Alambanam. But what is the Upasya Devata? Who is the Lord? How Lord is meditated upon here? The Lord is meditated upon as Samashti Pranaha. We can say Hiranyagarbha. So Hiranyagarbha is another important topic. Now here in this context, Shankar Bhagavatpada may understand first of all what is Hiranyagarbha. So Hiranyam Garbhe Asya Asti Iti Hiranyasya Sa Hiranyagarbha. Okay. So it's not Virad Upasanam, it is Hiranyagarbha Upasanam. Hiranyam Garbhe Asya Asti Iti Hiranyagarbha means, Hiranya means gold, Garbha means womb. The one who has gold in his womb is called golden womb, and people call it as golden egg. Oh my God. That doesn't mean. The Hiranyam Garbhe means that which always shines in the, you know, in the presence of, in the light of consciousness. That which always shines in the light of consciousness is said to be what? Brilliant. Is called Hiranyagarbha. People tend to say golden egg and all that. It's not golden egg or silver egg. Anyway. So, Hiranyagarbha is another name attributed to the Lord. When you look at the entire subtle manifestation, so subtle manifestation in its entirety is given, looked upon as Lord means, the name given is Hiranyagarbha. And one more thing you have to understand, Lord, the total is also called Hiranyagarbha. In some other context, the elevated, exalted Jiva is also called Hiranyagarbha. That's why I want to test it. So we understood the word Hiranyagarbha means Hiranyagarbha in Mandukya Upanishad or in other Mundaka Upanishad and all, we understood Hiranyagarbha means what? Hiranyagarbha is the name, one of the names of the Lord. And when do we use this name to the Lord, used to mean the Lord? When we look at the entire subtle manifestation, the Samashti Sukshma Prapanchaha, the subtle manifestation in its entirety is looked upon as Ishvara, the Lord, then you give a name Hiranyagarbha. That's one meaning. Another meaning, thing is, even the Jiva is also called Hiranyagarbha. When does Jiva get this name Hiranyagarbha? When the Jiva uplifts himself, elevates himself, becomes elevated Jiva, then he is called Hiranyagarbha, which means Hiranyagarbha is a position, a status attributed to the Jiva who attains this status. I mean, he is elevated, uplifted. This is Hiranyagarbha status. So here Hiranyagarbha Upasana means Hiranyagarbha is the Upasya Devata, which means Samashti Pranaha. Samashti Pranaha, the prana, the total prana, the vital power, the vital air in its entirety, when look at it as the prana of the whole, it gives Samashti Pranaha, is called here Hiranyagarbha. Okay? Today we are going to see also the meaning of this Asatamahadgamaya. Because we have our own understanding. And what is the meaning in the context of this mantra, also we will see today. So, because all comes together, why I have taken up today this topic, we need to understand in this how Upanishad presents here is mainly for our own expansion of the mind, our own wide understanding. These upasanas are discussed here. Even though we are not allowed, we are not practicing upasanas, but we need to understand what this is all about. So here, Hiranyagarbha as an exalted jiva, how can a jiva become Hiranyagarbha? Which means, how can jiva uplift himself and attain that status, attain that state, the position, isn't it? To explain this, this very upasana itself is discussed here. Here is upasana, but we are not practicing this meditation upon the prana, you know, as a Hiranyagarbha, samashti prana. And here especially, even though Hiranyagarbha stands for entire subtle manifestation, specifically we take that prana here. You know why? There are certain reasons how prana is exalted. Understanding certain special features of the prana. So it makes us think. Yes, to make us think. We take prana for granted. Oh, what prana? Physiological functions. Have you ever paid attention to physiological functions? Never. We eat, that's all we know. When you get hungry, you are reminded that a prana is working in your stomach. Otherwise, we never pay attention to pranas. And in this upasana, in this the third section or the first chapter of this Brahmanic Upanishad, the attention is paid only to prana. So it's a prana upasana, means samashti prana upasana, udgita upasana here is the udgita. Is alambanam for the prana is the Hiranyagarbha, the prana is here, the alambanam. So why prana is exalted, why prana is superior here? And the reasons are given. Therefore, we have to see what are the features which makes his prana a vital air, a unique one, a special one. So, the certain features are looked upon, and therefore we say the meditation is on what now? Not an ordinary prana, the prana who is endowed with some special attributes, special qualifications, special features. So, this is called a guna visishta prana upasanam. Guna visishta prana upasanam. The meditation. I tell you again, we are not practicing this meditation. We don't understand here. In this context, because I want to take it to today the mantra, the prayer mantra, Japa mantra. Before you go to Japa mantra, we'll see the context. Where this mantra comes. We have this the most popular mantra. Everywhere it is, people are chanting is Om Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Mritangamaya. It has literal meaning. It sounds different. But that is not the mean. This mantra is here in this section. It comes in this third section, the first chapter of the Brihadaranyak Upanishad. And it is given here as a prayer. It's a japa mantra, meant for japa. It means you are supposed to repeat this mantra wherein the prayer is revealed. So what does the word mean? So actually what mantra says, very simple, only one small meaning is given here. Asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma mritangamaya. If we take, so asato ma sadgamaya tamasoma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya. We have our own different meaning. But what actually, as a japa mantra, What is the meaning given here in this context? See, the word mrityorma amritangamyah, take from there. Okay. Mrityuhu literally means Lord of Death. But here, in this context, the mrityuhu means wrong thinking, wrong perception, wrong action. So improper thinking, perception, action is the meaning of the word mrityu here. But because these things, wrong thinking, wrong perception, wrong actions, so the desire which impels us to do wrong actions, the binding desires, are all mrityus, because which will keep us in the world of samsara. They are called mrityu. So amrita means what? Opposite. Amrita means, so right action, right perception, right thinking is amritam. It's a japa, prayer meant for the japa mantra, which has a prayer, isn't it? So the prayer is, O Lord, may you make me perform the right action, bless me with right thinking, right perception. So bless me with right thinking, right perception, and bless me with the right action. Make me performer of the right actions. This is the prayer. So, mrityoho amritam gamaya. So from being a person of wrong thinking, from being a person of wrong perception, from being a person of wrong actions, lead me to become the person of right actions, right thinking, and right perception. Right actions. This is the meaning. But actually we have different meaning. Lead me from what? From death to immortality. That's what we think. But in this context, the meaning is not. This is where the mantra is found. Here the meaning is not actually what we think. This is the meaning. And the second, asatoma sadgamaya tamasoma jyotirgamaya. And the same meaning for the next also. Tamasoma jyotirgamaya. Here, what is the meaning? Second is, so this knowledge of right action, pray for knowledge. It is knowledge of right action which will help us do the right action. So, O Lord, bless me with the knowledge of right and wrong. That will help me do the right action. So, remove the ignorance. So, now give me the knowledge of right action. So, tamasoma jyotirgamya means that you pray for the knowledge of the action. So, asatoma sadgamya. There again we think, please lead me from untruth to the truth. That's what people have, that literal meaning. But actually that's not the meaning here again. So, for the first same meaning. The same meaning is given for all the three. The actual prayer is, bless me, O Lord, bless me, make me a person of right thinking, right action, right perception. Bless me with the knowledge of right and wrong. Help me resolve the ignorance of wrong things. Is the prayer. So before this, we go to this. And then, for all the three sentences, literally, it is only meaning. As a as a japa mantra. So for to go this, here it is said, if we practice this upasanam, Hiranyagarbha upasanam, Udgita upasanam, the prana upasanam, along with this japa, then the meditation will be effective. So meditation practiced along with the japa will make this meditation very effective. It's more, it will be more powerful. That's what japa is prescribed. Anyway, before we go there. So here we see, to talk about the glory of the prana. Why first of all we say, the prana in all the beings, all the living creatures, prana is there, isn't it? It is the prana, it is the vital air which remains in all the creatures. That's why the very living creature is called pranihi. Prani, no? Prani. A living creature is called prani because prana asya asti iti prani. That which is a living being, a sentient being is called prani because there's a prana in all the living beings. The non-living things, there's no prana. That's why non-living thing and living thing, how do you differentiate? A living being is distinguished from a non-living thing because of the prana. And prana is one thing which is the same and one and the same and uniform in all the living creatures. This is the visesha gunaha of the prana. The special feature of the prana is one thing which is one and the same in all the living creatures. It can be a tiniest amoeba, tiniest ant, or a butterfly, or a worm, or an insect, another animal, or any wild animals, or a human being, or a huge elephant, doesn't matter. Prana is one and the same in all the beings. There's no difference in the prana. Whereas, others, there's difference in other aspects. With reference to prana, there's no difference. Prana is the same in all of them. If you take the sense organs, there's difference. You take the organs of actions, there is difference. If you take the antakaranam, there is difference. If you take the buddhi, there is difference. If you take the mind, there is difference. Isn't it? So all of them constitute the sukshma shariram. The mind, intellect, physiological functions, karmendriyani, organs of actions, jnanendriyani, karmendriyani, all of them constitute the sukshma shariram. And samashti sukshma shariranam samuhaha, the entirety, all the subtle bodies, the entirety is called sukshma prapanchaha. But still, which is Hiranyagarbha, Ishwaraha, we say, of all of them, this prana is very unique because prana, there's no taratamyam, there's no superiority or inferiority. The reference to this prana, because prana is one and the same in all the living beings. One thing is one special feature. Second thing, we can talk about, suppose the sense organs are there. Your eyes can perceive anything. It can perceive the desirable, it can see the wrong things as well as the right things. Your hearing power can hear right words, right things, and the wrong things. The nose can smell good and bad. It's a fragrance, it can also smell foul things. Is it other or good and the bad, right and the wrong? Even the tongue, the taste, anything. So it can see desirable and undesirable. All the sense organs can perceive desirable and the undesirable things. There's a difference. Eyes can watch something very good, auspicious. Eyes can also watch something rubbish. Your ears can hear something very useful, meaningful, uplifting, elevating words. Ears can also listen to some nonsense, rubbish things. So also, the sense organs can be involved in perceiving the desirable, undesirable, or good are the bad, auspicious or inauspicious things. That is why we have prayer also. Why? Bhadran karne bhishunyama devaha. The very prayer itself is it because of the possibility of being, you know, perceiving anything. So also we say karmendriyani. Not only jnanendriyani, our sense organs of actions also can involve themselves in the right actions or wrong actions. The powers of organs of actions can be used to do the right actions or the wrong actions. So the organ of speech is there. You can use it for speaking the truth, speaking the lies also, which is untruth also, which can be used for both good and bad, right and wrong. So karma indriyani and jnana indriyani. Also antahkaranam, we take the mind. The mind also can entertain the thoughts which are right thoughts, which impel it to do the right actions. We can entertain the thoughts which impel it to do the wrong actions. Right actions and wrong actions. Isn't it? So thoughts also can have what? Really noble thoughts which impel it to do the right actions. Or you can have the wrong thoughts which impel to the wrong actions. Mind also can have both. The same way, intellect also can have what? Sometimes knowledge or something can be right. Sometimes wrong knowledge. You have your own projections. You perceive, you think other person has done something wrong. You are thinking it is wrong. So you entertain your own thoughts which are right knowledge or wrong knowledge. Right understanding, misunderstanding. Like this, intellect also can have both right and wrong, good and bad. Mind also can entertain right and wrong, both good and bad. The sense organs can be involved in both good and bad, auspicious and inauspicious. Organs of actions also can be involved in, you know, auspicious and inauspicious. Right and wrong, good and bad. Whereas, the prana is the only one thing which is not touched, tainted by anything. No good thing or bad thing can touch the prana. No right thing or wrong thing can touch the prana. Prana is free from right and wrong. Prana is not involved in the right action or the wrong action. Just the pranas are there as pranas. Is it clear? You can see how to see this. Prana, huh? Is not involved in the entity. Prana is just supportive, behind all of them. But prana by itself is not touched by anything, right and wrong. Prana is not involved in anything inauspicious. Prana is not involved in anything auspicious also. Prana is just there. So prana is free from all forms of impurities. In terms of, there's no, suppose, the thoughts are there. Of course, thoughts back up your sense organs. The disease rise. And all day we know the root cause of the disease. We don't need to go into details now. So, disease are there naturally. So, disease are of likes and dislikes. And we do not have any say over this disease. Likes and dislikes are very, very natural. In keeping with our samskara, in keeping with our own tendency, we have our own likes and dislikes. In keeping with knowledge of our value of things we have in the world also, we do have cultivated desires or natural urges. There are likes and dislikes. But those likes and dislikes, the desires and likes and dislikes, definitely impel us to do the actions. When we do the actions, and we cannot use knowledge of right and wrong, even though we have knowledge of right and wrong, but still the force of desires will be such that we'll be doing actions. So this really control, the mind controls our sense organs and the organs of actions. So the disease says, see, the sense organs are involved in perception of certain things. The disease says, no, the sense organs are not involved in the perception. So disease impels us, go here, do this. So all our physical activities, again, organs of action in actions. The karma indriyani are also really what? Impelled by our actions. So in keeping with our desires, as impelled by our desires, our karmendriyani, our jnanendriyani are involved in their respective actions or functions. Is it clear? Is it true or not? See, the certain objectivity should come here. You see that your helplessness. The desires come in the form of likes and dislikes. And then our behavior, the physical activities or sense perceptions are in keeping with the desires you entertain here, thoughts. Then, when the desires do not get fulfilled, so I'm going into details, okay? Don't think I'm just talking something useless. It's all understanding Hiranyagarbha properly. Okay. So, when the desires do not get fulfilled, likes and dislikes, you know, do not get fulfilled, or the results are not to expectations, then naturally what happens? There is anger. There is frustration. There is hurt. There is hurt. And the situation or people externally responsible, they become victims of our anger also. So much of anger, because not something my own perception might have caused it, but anger. So there is anger. Then anger also, in anger, again you cannot think properly, means in anger, again your actions are what? Thoughtless actions. Not thoughtful actions. In anger, reactions are not thoughtful actions, thoughtless actions. So without thinking, when you say it's called mechanical actions, the mechanical action is called reaction. Thoughtful action is different from mechanical action. So what results in mechanical action? Unfulfilled desire results in hurt or anger, and which results in the thoughtless mechanical action called reaction, which again causes what? Guilt and hurt. Guilt on your part, hurt on other person's part. Why? Other person becomes the victim of your behavior, becomes what? Gets hurt. Is it clear? Hurt. Solve what now? Not this. Then, this also, when your desires are not fulfilled, at the same time, other person, you see other person getting all your desires fulfilled, okay? Whatever desires you have, you see right in front of you, as you are not able to get your desires fulfilled, you see other person getting those desires fulfilled also. Whatever you wanted to have, other person is having. My God. If I thought only I don't get it, other person gets it. Other person also doesn't get it, it can help you manage the problem. Other person gets it, what you don't get it, that is when what comes? Something called jealousy. So, kamaha, krodaha, isn't it? And if you get it, you want more, that is called lobaha. Isn't it? Then completely, and the more you get also, the more you get deluded, that you cannot see what is right and what is wrong. You cannot see what is permanent, what is impermanent. And you see your desire for pleasure is such, you're deluded. What happens then? There's also jealousy comes. Moha, madaha. And the more you get, also, the more you accomplish also, the more you're able to get your desires fulfilled, as a pride also comes. Pride also is there. Madaha, I have fulfilled it. Isn't it? The garum also comes. Then matsaryam. Matsaryam is jealousy. So these are the sixfold enemies. So kama, the likes and dislikes, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsaryam. Said to be sixfold enemies. Okay? And the six are there in the mind, all in different degrees. Okay? You may say, I don't have much. Okay? 25% of jealousy is there, means other person have my 50%. So, different degree may vary from person to person. The proportion may vary from person to person. But all the six are there in every mind. dormant and latent. Where there is ajnanam, definitely all the six will be dormant. Don't think you talked about Hiranyagarbha gone somewhere. No. To bring all to Hiranyagarbha only. So these six are there. Okay. Therefore all mind. Emotional side of the mind. And here the buddhi we have. The buddhi, the capacity to think, you know, this knowledge of right and wrong, it's all there. But when the mind is so powerful, the buddhi becomes very dull and enslaved. Buddhi, mind becomes the master, intellect becomes the slave. Completely, it is overpowered. The knowledge of right and wrong is there, it is not used. It is still there. And even the world, how you perceive things, all wrong perception. You mistake other people's behavior, what other people do, what other people talk, what other people say, isn't it? See, any behavior suddenly mistaken. Our own projections. This must be the reason. This must be the reason. This must have become like this. So you have your own logic and you have your own thinking, and you everything you perceive wrongly. When you perceive wrongly, and you make wrong conclusions. Based on your wrong perception, you have wrong conclusions and you have wrong understanding. Isn't it? So buddhi, even though buddhi is capable of thinking correctly, sometimes when it becomes overpowered by the intellect, mind, the wrong mind, buddhi is also given to wrong thinking and wrong perception. Is it clear now? This is how mind and intellect can be in both ways. It can be given, it can be the right side, it can be the wrong side also. Now, when this mind on intellect, it is the wrong, with the wrong thinking, wrong perception, wrong understanding, and with this, the enslaved, the master, the mind which is a master, having the mind as the master, intellect as the slave, then these sense organs are associated with always mind and intellect. You would have studied in, when you understood this pranas, the koshas, what is manomaya kosha, what is vijnanamaya kosha? Manomaya kosha means the pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, you understood very clearly. What is pranamaya kosha? Pancha pranaha pancha karmendriyani. Lead the pranas now. So, what about your in the manomaya kosha and vijnanamaya kosha? Means mind with the sense organs. Six of them constitute manomaya kosha. Mind with intellect with sense organs constitute the vijnanamaya kosha. So the sense organs are associated with the both mind and the intellect. Therefore, what happens? That's why what you want is the desire to see things, not the appropriate things. Abhadram, not bhadram. So you're interested in seeing things which will not elevate you, uplift you, which will not help you grow, will not help you mature. Is it? You can use this thing, watch some useless serials where mother-in-law and daughter-in-law are fighting. Isn't it? Which will not help you grow anywhere, any distance. So what you watch, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, all this, your food you're interested in, the smells you're interested in, the objects of perception you're interested in, inclination. For which are the objects your mind is dragged towards watching or seeing or what hearing? You know? So, my God, who determines? We take it for granted, no? Our time is so precious here in this life. The span of life is very, very precious. We don't know. Every day we are losing one day in our lifespan. We are gone. Year gone is gone. Month gone is gone in our lifespan. We never pay attention, isn't it? As we are going to be alive here for thousands of years, we are wasting our time, really. We are not very serious about it. Some people say, don't be very serious. We don't need to be very serious, but we have to be serious. Too serious is a problem, okay? It has to be more serious. You can't take everything for granted. So, we don't pay attention, really speaking. So, if this sense organs, organs of actions, where are they involved? Are they involved in watching useful, perceiving useful things, or involved in doing some right actions? don't pay attention. So when this, therefore, here in this Shankara beautifully says, asuras and devatas. Who are the asuras and who are the devatas? Really, it's very nice to understand these things. He says, your own sense organs, your own organs of actions, if they are involved in activities, impulsively, you know, instinctively they are involved in some functions, some actions. They're involved in whatever the mind says, they're just involved in that, those activities. Means they're all asuras. All your organs are asuras. Suppose if they're governed by your, if the mind is not a master, the buddhi, the intellect is the slave, mind is the master, then all your organs are what? Asuras. If the mind is, intellect is the master, mind is the slave, means what? If the your knowledge of right and wrong governs your desires. Knowledge of right and wrong governs your thinking. Then what happens? Your organs are not slaves. Then organs are involved only in, they're not just allowed to be instinctively, impulsively function. They are governed by your intellect, which has mastery over the mind. Then they're all devatas. So, devatas. In what happens? In asuryam and deva, I tell you. In asura, when we say asuras means what? Asuras means all the organs becomes asuras, the demons, okay? Your sense organs, your organs of actions, they all become asuras means they are used. Which, when are the asuras? They are not, they are impulsively, instinctively involved in their own functions. Because completely governed by your mind, which has mastery over your knowledge of right and wrong. Involved in inauspicious wrong things. You are helped to be objective. You are just here. You see how the mind is, how the intellect is, and how they are governed by, are they governed by your intellect or your mind? They can be governed by your intellect if the mind is a slave. If the mind is overpowers the intellect, then they'll be governed by your mind. Then they'll be involved in all wrong things, means they're all asuraha. If the mind is governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, then that intellect governed sense organs, organs of actions, are devatas. Here, what is the difference? So, in being an asura, when all these indriyani, all these powers are like asuras, you are, the abhimana you have is vyashti abhimanam. The identity is individual identity. There's individuality and individual identity, which means you think of only your own pleasures, your own happiness, your own well-being. Your means you and anything which makes you happy around your family, your friends, your circle. Very limited. So, even the all wrong actions, improper actions, everything which goes against dharma, it all because of what? Because of self-centeredness, means nothing wrong if you do it for your happiness. But you search for the happiness in the wrong pleasures. So your pleasure, your happiness, your well-being, your family well-being becomes important. That is when, that is the asura, is the behavior of an asura. So Shankara calls it vyashti abhimanam. Vyashti abhimanam is what? identity with one's own entertaining individuality, having individual identity. Is it? There's no wide understanding vision is not there. Then asura. Then you are asura. In fact, Swami used to say, if you are in a temple, if you entertain thoughts not pertaining to the temple, itself is asura's working. In the class, if the thoughts of the family or home comes, you're asura. Asura thoughts. Mind is asura. Suppose at home, you think of anything else other than the family. Asura. So be with those objects. When you are in the temple, have thoughts associated with the Bhagavan. When you are at home, you be entertain thoughts pertaining to the family. When you are at work, entertain thoughts pertaining to the work. It means even that extent, even that's also, that's impossible, isn't it? Already we can see how difficult it is. Yeah, all the thoughts come everywhere. It's called a distraction. Entertaining all the thoughts, every thoughts associated, connected or unconnected, everywhere is called what? Distraction. So here, how to understand? So, don't think only the sense organs, asuras and devatas. These asuras, you call these sense organs and the mind as asuras. You can call them as devatas. When only what governs what? If the mind is governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, your desires are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, the mind is managed by your buddhi, not enslaved. Mind is managed by your intellect, then all your sense organs, all organs of actions, in otherwise called shamaha, damaha, if you have, then they are all devatas. If we don't have shamaha and damaha, instead of intellect managing the mind, the intellect is overpowered by the mind and enslaved by the mind, then your organs are all asuras. Is it clear now? So in asura's life, there is self-identity, there is individuality, there is only individual well-being is thought of. It's called vyashti abhimanam. So in living, suppose if the intellect is managing the mind, all thoughts are governed by knowledge of right and wrong. So in keeping knowledge of right and wrong, then all carefully all the sense organs, all the organs of actions are managed very well. All of them are devatas. In being a devata, this is samashti abhimanam. Identity is with the samashti. Of course, in thinking of everybody's well-being, your well-being is included. In thinking of only your well-being, others' well-being is not included. In samashti, vyashti is included. Isn't it? In vyashti, samashti is not included. In individual, total is not included. In total, individual is included. Which is inclusive of what? Individual is non-inclusive of the total. The total is inclusive of the individual. Isn't it? In asura buddhi, in being an asura, there's individualized vyashti abhimanam. In being a devata, there's a samashti abhimanam. Is called, is it clear now? Therefore, here, the story is also given here. So the asuras can attack all the sense organs, all the organs of actions, your mind also, the intellect also, all of them can become the victims of the asuras. Right and wrong can touch what? These other aspects of the sukshma. But prana is one thing. There is no right or wrong for prana, isn't it? Prana just functions. So prana is what? Pure, which is not tainted by right and wrong. There's no way of prana doing something wrong or improper or right. Just what does prana do? Prana just constantly involved, governs the five different functions, sees the life continues to exist there. Is it clear? You see that? How physiological functions alone are not subject to right and wrong. They're untouched. Your prana is said to be what now? Vishuddha pranaha. Vishuddha pranaha means the prana is pure, which is not subject to right and wrong. You're given to anything right and wrong. Whereas all other aspects can become the victims of asuras or devatas. Asuras that can be involved in right and the wrong, proper and the improper, actions and functions. Whereas there's no such thing called improper actions on the part of the prana. But without prana, there cannot be right or wrong actions. So prana is pure. So pranaha vishuddha. So vishuddha pranaha vishuddha. No? Vishuddhavan. Vishuddha is first one aspect. Second aspect we have to understand is, even if the anything try to go also, the prana always keeps all the, nothing can touch the wrong thinking. Anything wrong, anything inauspicious cannot touch the prana. So prana keeps all of them very away. Okay, the wrong desires, the wrong thinking, or the wrong actions. So all the prana keeps all of them away. Therefore, dure sthapayati iti duhu. One of the names is called dur. Duhu. Duhu is name of the prana. That which keeps away all the wrong, all the inauspicious things. Prana keeps all the inauspicious wrong actions and thinking away. Therefore, prana is said to be dur. So, vishuddha pranaha, dur pranaha. One thing. Second name. And the third thing, all these sense organs, if without prana can be without all these organs, but organs cannot survive without the prana. It is also again given in the form of story. Suppose somebody is born or after some being born, somebody becomes blind. Without the seeing power, one can, it's difficult, but one can manage one's life. Only thing, one cannot see everything. One cannot see things, but not being able to see things in the world does not mean one cannot survive. One can live. So without hearing power, power of hearing, one can remain deaf. Use the all modern equipments, or can still, he doesn't need to hear, he can still, as a deaf person, without being able to hear anything also, one can survive in the world. One doesn't need to be dependent on things. So also, without any of these sense organs, a person can survive still. So can survive. But without prana, one cannot survive. If prana is not there, even the sense organs cannot see, ears cannot hear, nose cannot smell, tongue cannot taste. So all the organs have to draw their energy to be functional only from prana. If prana support is not there, they cannot even survive. So all the sense organs, all the powers of organs of actions, are even the mind, for it to be functional, intellect to be functional, the antakranam and all the 11 of them are dependent on these pranas for their very survival. They dependent. As prana is not dependent on any of them. Prana can be by itself. So without them, life is possible. Without prana, life is not possible. So prana is the very life of all the beings. Prana is the life in everything. And second thing, prana doesn't keep, prana is the one which takes all the oblations, all the food you offer to the stomach. Right now, prana alone takes all the energy. Prana is very energy. But prana doesn't keep anything for itself. It distributes energy to everything equally. That's why it's also called samanaha. One of the names of prana is samanaha. Of all the five names, the important name is called samanaha. Samam nayati iti samanaha. Anything you consume, all the energy is equally distributed to all the indriyas, all the limbs. By whom? By samana. Therefore, prana is not selfish. Means what? Prana doesn't keep anything for itself. It always shares. It's a small lesson here. How prana is? It's all paying attention to what prana is doing here. You see, prana. And then what it, you know, therefore it is the, prana is the essence of all the limbs. Without the prana, no limb can survive itself. For anganam rasaha iti angirasaha. Prana is said to be angirasaha. Angirasaha is also the name of the rishi. And prana is also called angirasaha because rasa, the essence of all the limbs, is called angirasaha. Therefore, prana is what? It's a devata. Now we can say, the samashti prana is what? We say Ishvara. So when this, we understand this vala, therefore, that is why, how prana is, understand all these different virtues of the prana. How prana contribute for the survival of all the limbs, remains the essence of all the limbs, and prana is untainted by right and wrong, and prana is not, no, even if anything wrong, we try to pollute the prana also, you cannot say, you know, cannot be successful. You can pollute the mind, can pollute the intellect, can pollute other mind and intellect and sense organs, organs of actions, but prana is non-pollutable. Prana can never be polluted. Any effort you make to pollute the prana, may involve prana in something wrong, inauspicious, means you will be a failure. Because prana is something very pure. Prana cannot be involved in anything inauspicious. There's a position of the prana. This story is given in the Upanishad. You know, it's exactly like what? Suppose if you throw, take a big, you know, ball of clay and throw the big ball of clay upon the piece, big rock. What will happen? Will rock break or the clay ball will break? Clay ball will break, isn't it? So the clay ball thrown upon the rock is like, what? No, the asuras. And this here, prana, the rock is like, prana is like the rock, which means no negative tendencies, no negative things lead to inauspicious thing can attack the prana. These are prana's virtues. Therefore, prana is here taken as what? Taken for upasana. Prana is taken as alambanam for upasana meditation. That is said here. But what important thing is, how this prana upasana, what is the benefit of prana upasana? We practice meditation upon this prana as Hiranyagarbha, samashti prana. See these virtues of prana and pay attention to the virtues of prana and meditation upon this prana as samashti prana. There is no vyashti prana. Samashti prana, then what happens? The vyashti prana, prana upasanam will help one. Seeing the virtues of the prana will help one have what now? Convert the asuras into devatas. One's own, you know, the perception will change, the thinking will change, understanding will change, and then our involvement, our mind will be managed by our knowledge of right and wrong. Our actions will be in the right actions. They won't be wrong actions, which means we are not thinking only of our pleasures and happiness. We think not thinking only of our own benefits. We think of the entire humanity. We think of everybody in the world. Our we are well wishes of the whole world. We think of well being of the whole world, which means there is no vyashti abhimanam. There will be samashti abhimanam. So prana upasanam in due course of time will help us one. Help one, shift one's vyashti abhimanam to samashti abhimanam. When this shifted, okay, this identity, this attitude of thinking of well-being of society, not by doing something specially, not by doing anything very specially differently, just by doing the right things. It's a big seva. People think of want to do big service to the society. In fact, just under being conscious of one's own actions, one's own behavior, you know, one's own thinking, one's perception, one's actions, one's speech, one's words, paying attention to all these things itself is what? How do you pay attention? Seeing, understanding the virtues of prana. See how virtuous the prana is. How the prana upasanam, seeing this virtues of the prana will help you convert your asuras into devatas. Your own organs become devatas when they are involved in right things. Right perception, right thinking, isn't it? Right speech, then they're all devatas. The wrong actions, wrong perception, wrong thinking, asuras. For which they must be governed by, knowledge of right and wrong. Which means their mind must be managed by knowledge of right and wrong, intellect. Intellect should manage the mind. Then everything becomes governed by the intellect. Then there's a devata, which means there's a samashti abhimanam. In being a devata, samashti abhimanam. Is it? In being an asura, there is a vyashti abhimanam. Instead, your mind is not governed by your intellect. Intellect is overpowered by the mind, enslaved by the mind. Then everything is governed by, dictated by your mind means there's a vyashti abhimanam. In vyashti abhimanam, you are a selfish individual. You're foolishly selfish. In samashti abhimanam, you're intelligently selfish. So this is that's why devata means indriyam is vyashti shakti. Devata is samashti shakti. Vyashti prana upasanam will help one in due course of time. The prana upasanam, when everything becomes, all indriyani becomes devatas. When you convert asuras into devatas, by seeing the virtues, dwelling upon the virtues of the prana, or by practicing prana upasanam, indriyani becomes, asuras become devatas. When devatas means all the devatas put together is what? Hiranyagarbha, Ishvara. Isn't it? This is how an individual becomes Hiranyagarbha. When you convert the asuras into devatas, you are no more ordinary jiva, then you attain Hiranyagarbha status. It might have sounded very, very simple kindergarten class. But do you see the beauty of it? What is Hiranyagarbha? Where is Hiranyagarbha? Isn't it? Vyashti Samashti, where is Vyashti Samashti? Where is Vyashti Samashti? Tell me now. Where is the Abhimanam? Isn't it? Vyashti Samashti is only an Abhimanam, identity. There's no Vyashti Samashti. Suppose we go and see the whole ocean, big ocean in front of you. Is there something called individual wave and the totality of waves? It's just only one huge ocean. One total big ocean. It is in your perception, you separate one wave and see as an individual wave. And from the standpoint of the ocean, you call it individual. And from the standpoint of this, you say total. Isn't it? There is no such thing called Vyashti Samashti. There is only just one whole. Is it clear? Therefore, here also, Shankara Bhagavatpada makes it very clear in his commentary on this particular portion. He says, see, asuras and devata, we need not, should not take only these organs as asuras and devatas. But here, what is that asura and devata? Really speaking, if your karmendriyani or jnanendriyani are involved, associated with things which is against dharma, they are all asura, attacked by asuras. They are involved with in the right things, then they are blessed by devatas. Your own indriyani can be asuras, can be devatas. But you can say, all the time we are not asuras, isn't it? All the time they are not involved in wrong thinking, or wrong perception. There are occasions we have wrong thinking, wrong perception. Most of them you are also okay also. There is a mixture. Devasura mixture. You have both asuras and devatas. But here, this upasana will help us overpower this. Just by understanding the virtues of the prana, you can see how to convert these asuras into devatas. Which is called in Shastram, Shamaha Damaha. If you have Shamaha and Damaha, means you are given to following these disciplines, very simple disciplines. Shamaha and Damaha, we say, having mastery over your mind, Shamaha, having mastery over sense organs is called Damaha. If we don't have Shamaha and Damaha, they are asuras. Have Shamaha and Damaha, Shama must be there for Dama to be there. Without Shamaha, Damaha is not possible. If you have mastery over your mind, then you have mastery over your sense organs. Then they are asuras, devatas. In having them as devatas, not as asuras, you have samashti abhimanam. Samashti abhimanam means the jiva who is endowed with devatas is Hiranyagarbha. Jiva who is endowed with asuras is jivaha. So towards the end, so we break. Okay, give a break now. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.